Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We are continuing our look at the Journal of Discourses, 26 volumes of sermons by various Mormon leaders during the latter part of the 19th century. And our purpose is, as we have said many times, is to give you a little bit of an eyewitness view, if you will, of what life was like in 19th century Utah. Many people assume that the church has really not changed all that much, that Mormons living today lived pretty much like the Mormons of the 19th century, but yet we find that that's not always the case, that there were a lot of things that were taught in the 19th century that Mormons today would not believe, and there's actually some behaviors that went on in the 19th century that probably a lot of Mormons today would abhor. One of those deals with the subject of the Word of Wisdom. The Word of Wisdom is found in Section 89 of the Doctrine and Covenants, and it's basically known as the Mormon Health Law. And what I mean by that is that there were certain restrictions on what Latter-day Saints could drink, could eat, and also had prohibitions regarding the use of tobacco, as well as other things. According to Section 89, it says it was a revelation given through Joseph Smith, the prophet, at Kirtland, Ohio, and the date is February 27, 1833. You can also find this in the History of the Church, Volume 1, page 327 to 329. Here's how it begins, though, and this is important to get a little bit of a background on this so that you will understand why we are using the various quotes from the Journal of Discourses in comparison to what is actually said in Section 89. It starts off by saying, "A word of wisdom for the benefit of the council of high priests assembled in Kirtland and the church and also the saints in Zion, to be sent greeting not by commandment or constraint, but by revelation and the word of wisdom showing forth the order and will of God in the temporal salvation of all saints in the last days." Now, when you read that in verse 2, it says to be sent greeting not by commandment or constraint. Now, tell me, Eric, doesn't that sound like this is not something that should be absolutely required of the people that this is addressed to? And who is it addressed to? It's for the benefit of the council of high priests. Now, that sounds a little bit confusing. It doesn't seem to be a requirement, but yet we find from Joseph Smith that it was actually a requirement, to a certain extent at least, because if you looked at the teachings of the prophet Joseph Smith in Section 3, and the page is 117, it has a section on the Word of Wisdom where it says, "President Joseph Smith Jr. next made a few remarks on the Word of Wisdom, giving the reason of its coming forth, saying it should be observed." Now, there's a footnote to this, and I want to read this to you because this is important. In the footnote, it says, "This statement by the prophet is in accord with the action of the High Council of the Church shortly after its organization in February 1834. At one of the earliest meetings of this council, over which the presidency of the church presided, the following action was taken. The question was asked, whether disobedience to the word of wisdom was a transgression sufficient to deprive an official member from holding office in the church after having it sufficiently taught him. After a free and full discussion, Joseph Smith the prophet gave the following decision, which was unanimously accepted by the council. No, and I'm quoting, no official member in this church is worthy to hold an office after having the word of wisdom properly taught him, and he, the official member, neglecting to comply with and obey it." So it sounds like, though it wasn't an absolute requirement that has been put on the lay membership, if you held an office in the church, that puts you in a separate category. In other words, you were responsible for holding to the word of wisdom. It was a requirement for you as an office holder in the church. Now, as we said, how was it handled in the 19th century? If we look back at some of the statements that were made by people like Brigham Young and such, Wilford Woodruff and others, we find that the word of wisdom seemed to be a stumbling block for a lot of members. It doesn't sound like they were holding to it quite as well as you would think they should. And that seems to be an interesting take. Go ahead.
Well, from what you just read from Joseph Smith, would the bishops be included in that, do you think?
I would think that that would be an office that they held and would have to be required to hold it, yes.
Well, listen to what Brigham Young said on April 7th, 1867, in the tabernacle in Salt Lake City. He said, "You go through the wards of the city and then through the wards in the country and ask the bishops, do you keep the word of wisdom? The reply will be, yes. No, not exactly. Do you drink tea? No. Coffee? No. Do you drink whiskey? No. Well, then, why do you not observe the word of wisdom? Well, this tobacco, I cannot give it up." And in this, he sets an example to every man and to every boy over 10 years of age, in his ward, to nibble at and chew tobacco. You go to another ward, and perhaps a bishop does not chew tobacco, nor drink tea nor coffee. But once in a while, he takes a little spirits and keeps whiskey in his home, in which he will occasionally indulge. Go to another ward, and perhaps a bishop does not drink whiskey nor chew tobacco, but he cannot give up his tea and coffee. And so it goes on through the whole church. Not that every bishop indulges in one or more of these habits, but most of them do.
So most of the bishops, according to Brigham Young, were violating the word of wisdom. Now, that's not the only time when we hear a comment like that. There are other times as well. You have what volume is that in the journal?
This is volume 8 on page 361. And Brigham Young said on March 10th, 1860, "Many of the brethren chew tobacco, and I advise them to be modest about it. Do not take out a whole plug of tobacco in meeting before the eyes of the congregation and cut off a long slice and put it in your mouth to the annoyance of everyone around. Do not glory in this disgraceful practice. If you must use tobacco, put a small portion in your mouth when nobody sees you, and be careful that no one sees you chew it. I do not charge you with sin. You have the word of wisdom."
Now, I've never chewed tobacco in my life. I got to be honest with you. That is probably, it's disgusting, because you don't chew. You don't just chew and you swallow. If you swallow it, you're going to get sick. So
spit.
You have to spit.
Right.
Okay, you have to spit it. So, and really, what's more disgusting than that? But here, Brigham Young is kind of aiding and abetting people in his own church to break the word of wisdom.
On May 5th, 1870, he said in volume 13, pages 343 to 344, that if they were going to chew and spit, not to chew and spit it on the tabernacle floor. Apparently, it was causing quite a mess there. So the people who are listening, can you imagine? They're listening to the speaker, a prophet, an apostle, and they're chewing and spitting there. So that was a problem in this 19th century Mormon church.
Now, the point, though, is if they are officers in the church, shouldn't Brigham Young actually be telling them to knock it off or forfeit their office, rather than giving the impression that you should somehow sneak about it,
around? Or just a little bit's okay somehow. I mean, the impression that you might give to those who are under 10 years of age. I mean, what's the difference whether it's a secret sin or it's a public sin? If it's not meant to be, they shouldn't be doing any. It's like saying, don't get caught cheating, Johnny. Just make sure that you look around and make sure you do it quickly. If it's wrong, it's wrong.
You make a good point there, because he is basically telling somebody how to violate it, but to do it in a discreet manner. Mm. I have a difficult time thinking that most Mormons today would actually condone that kind of counsel.
Well, I'm sure a bishop would get brought to counsel real quick if he were to give that to a member. Say,
can you imagine a member going to a stake president or something? Hey, Bishop so-and-so says it's okay for us to chew tobacco, but we got to do it discreetly. Instead of taking a big plug and stuffing it in our mouth, we'll just take a little bit and then not chew it.
It's actually quite...
I don't even know how that works. Can you even not chewing tobacco? I mean, it just sits in your mouth and you don't do it. I don't know.
If he wasn't being serious, it's humorous. I mean, if nothing else.
Well, this is the thing that I think a lot of people don't understand, because in modern Mormonism, to violate the word of wisdom would actually prevent you from even getting a temple recommend. See, it's not always been that way in the Mormon church. And so people need to understand that they've kind of changed the rules, that even though God looked upon it as more not of a commandment or something by constraint, the Mormon church has since made it so. So either God changed his mind between 1833 and whenever they changed it, which I think was about 100 years later. Who was behind that? Did God actually get new information where he had to make a course correction?
On October 9th, 1865, I'm reading from Volume 11 on page 140, he said that they spent over $100,000 a year between 1849 to 1853 on tobacco. And then he says, we now spend considerably more than we did then, a decade later. So, I mean, $100,000 a year back then, each year they were spending that. Those 5 years would be $500,000 right there.
That's a lot of violations.
Yes, it is.
So what do we do with this? I mean, this is what always kind of bothers me. It seems like the Mormon church can come up with these Latter-day revelations that lay down a dictum for the membership, and then they can go about and they can make corrections later on. I guess I'm kind of looking at this as similar to what the Mormon church has done with the Book of Mormon. Joseph Smith claims that he translates the Book of Mormon by the gift and power of God. Witnesses also say the same thing. But then the Mormon church comes along later on, and even though it was translated by the gift and power of God, it feels perfectly all right to just go back and make corrections, alterations in the Book of Mormon. After a while, you have to ask yourself, wait a minute, if this was really God giving this in the first place, why are you changing it later on, unless you want us to believe that your God, the Mormon God, either has a memory problem or he changes his values as time goes on? Now, I would never think that of my God. My God doesn't do that. He doesn't have a memory problem. He's not fickle. He doesn't get new information that causes him to make course corrections. But it seems very clear that the God of Mormonism does that. Why doesn't that bother more people? Why don't more members of the church think this through? We're going to talk some more about this word of wisdom and how it was looked upon in the 19th century in tomorrow's broadcast.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. When trying to understand the doctrines of our Latter-day Saint friends, family members, and co-workers, it can be very difficult to know what to believe. In his resource titled, In Their Own Words, A Collection of Mormon Quotations, Mormonism Research Ministry's Bill McKeever compiles some of the very best Mormon quotations that will help you better understand what LDS leaders and scholars have said on such issues as atonement, exaltation, and pre-existence. Written in an encyclopedic format, In Their Own Words provides quotes on literally dozens of issues, alphabetically listed for quick reference that can be found in a matter of seconds. No more wondering what Mormonism's leaders have said on any topic. And this resource is available in both book format as well as on CD disc. Just load the PDF file onto your computer and you're ready to do valuable research. These are the very best quotes that Mormonism Research Ministry uses on a regular basis. In Their Own Words is available now at mrm.org. Again, mrm.org. Get it today.